All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, January 4th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a chilly 33 degrees and raining here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Invasive Tech, Wi-Fi brain implants, digital resurrections, and hive mind. We talked about a lot of disturbing new technologies. The one in particular is being able to utilize Wi-Fi within your environment to connect integrated devices. In this case, these were devices that would be integrated into our bodies, such as, and they said it, brain implants and other things such as, I don't even remember. You guys remember what they were talking about? I don't know. There were a couple other things, but brain implants happens to be the one that I remember. But it's disturbing because we've discovered that Wi-Fi, ubiquitous Wi-Fi that's everywhere, being used for a lot more than just carrying our dopamine-inducing text messages to our friends and family with Wi-Fi. They've been able to literally scan emotions and read them remotely, as well as see through walls. That was that MIT technology. And let's take a look at that for a minute, just because I mentioned it a bunch of times, but I don't know if I ever actually covered the story. MIT researchers, this is October 28, 2015. MIT researchers use Wi-Fi to recognize people through walls, and it can also distinguish you from other people. So you're in a room, you got eight people in there, and they can just... Bzzz. Oh, there's Joel over there. Make sure we aim a little bit to the left. Researchers at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab have developed software that uses variations in Wi-Fi signals to recognize human silhouettes through walls. The researchers built a device called RF Capture that transmits wireless signals and then analyzes the reflections of those signals to piece together a human form, according to the study. The technology is an extension of something MIT began working on a few years ago. Back in 2013, they used a similar radio frequency technology to detect motion on the other side of a wall or an obstruction. Gizmodo reports that RF capture is sophisticated enough to determine subtle differences in body shapes and with a 90% accuracy, distinguishing between 15 different people through a wall. And it can even determine a person's breathing pattern and heart rate. Now we've discovered, and your emotions. Here's how it works. RF capture is placed in a room, and the person walks in a neighboring room on the other side of the wall. The device emits a wireless signal, which is 802.11 Wi-Fi. It doesn't give a frequency, but I would assume it's probably 2.4 gigahertz or maybe 5.8. Those are probably the two most common. The device emits wireless signal, which travels through the wall and reflects off of different parts of the human body as it moves. As various parts of the body are reflected in the wireless signal, the RF capture takes snapshots and then using an algorithm to identify body parts. We even have body part algorithms now. When the researchers focused the device on specific movement patterns, they were able to trace a person's handwriting as they wrote in thin air. There's no real-world application yet, says the MIT researcher, but there are many possibilities. According to Gizmodo, RF capture could be used to track the movements of an elderly person living alone. And again, it is for Nana. We are going to save Nana by seeing through your walls. We will also be able to determine if Nana had fallen down. This technology could also potentially be used in smart homes. If certain gestures are detected by the device that are used to control appliances, it could see you. And the researchers expect the technology to get way more accurate over time. So don't you worry about it. This seems like an excellent way to spy on someone. Well, you're not wrong. You know, I don't know. If we learn one thing on this show, like all this technology is being used to spy on us. And I know, call me crackety, tinfoil hat wearing Jewel, but hate to tell you, 20 years, 25 years, I've been jumping up and down playing Chicken Little, calling attention to all the possibles that can be done with technology. Nobody listened, except for maybe my dad. He's the only one that would ever listen to me, but sometimes he'd waffle. Jewel, you're just being paranoid. And then he'd sometimes be like, Jewel, oh my goodness. But I'm telling you, it's all for spying purposes. Any of these technologies that they are working on now always has some sort of dual use, whether it be to get inside of you or get into your house and then watch what's going on. It's all about surveillance to be able to put information into a dashboard, all in the name of keeping you and Nana and Johnny safe. But, you know, don't forget, we have alphabet agencies galore. We have Microsoft Cyber Patrol working together with law enforcement all across the globe that are keeping their eyes on all kinds of electronic data. NSA 21 is now the inside and the outside spy agency, all brought together under one big happy umbrella to be able to collect and gather information about you and give you a threat score. That's what it's about. So don't think when something new comes out and they're trying to spin it to you as some amazing new wondrous technology, like, oh, I don't know, legions of nanobots in your blood. Don't be the first one to step up for it. Because the joke is gonna be on you. And you won't find out for 20 years later. All these freebies, especially free email. Oh, yeah. Sign up and tell it everything. Use it for all of our important emails and connect with all of our friends. Oh, they weren't scanning that for keywords. They weren't trying to sell you stuff. I mean, caveat emptor. Buyer beware, anything that is free, anything that seems too good to be true, probably is. So, look out. Wireless sees through walls. Wireless can also read your emotions. And I don't know if I even have that one up here anymore. Let's look at this. Oh. No, this is the Israeli company. Well, it could read your emotions. We had that the other day. Sorry, guys. I am still really trying to recover. It's not getting any easier. Emotions. Wi-Fi. Here we go. This Wi-Fi can tell if you're sad. Oh, geez. You know, the next thing you're going to have smiling little robots coming out of the closet to cheer you up. All right, this Wi-Fi can tell if you're sad. Our modern environment is saturated with wireless signals. And if you remember way back when we took a look at, I think it was a Swedish or Norwegian artist who had mapped the wireless signals that were going on and the radio signals that were going on in a room. And he was completely flabbergasted at how the entire room was just bathed in all these different frequencies that nobody seems to warn us about, to tell us that, yes, there is a potential for some sort of future damage by exposing us to all these wireless technologies. If you remember, you know, they're getting ready to roll out all this 5G secret launches in the New Mexico desert and all these skybenders drones. We can get internet in Africa. Connect us all to that internet of everything. If you remember when we first started looking at that, we had found a study that had real concern about 5G, especially, and I think this was long before they were talking about making it ubiquitous everywhere. But they found that 5G was able to unzip DNA. Remember that? And here we have CRISPR. CRISPR's out there now. It's probably one of the most promising technologies for 2017. I just saw they're coming up with all kinds of ways to zip and unzip. Zip, zip. Our DNA strands. Unzip, insert, re-zip, zip. To genetically modify things. We got insects now. They're going to run around and do that for us. We got digital rights management for the genome that they are working on. You know, so we can't accidentally on purpose unzip your DNA, whoops, or have a foreign actor like China launch some DNA unzipping weapon on us. Nope, nope, nope. So we're going to lock all that down. But interestingly, 5G, actually, I'm trying to remember if it was 5G or millimeter wave. Maybe it was millimeter wave. But the two of them right now are being used in conjunction with each other. There was a Scientific American article that talked about utilizing millimeter wave to boost 5G to extend its distance. And that's what they were looking to do in some of these towers and Skybender drones with some sort of dual rollout. Millimeter wave is used for a lot of military radar applications. It's an old technology. But they can use millimeter wave as a molecular scanner. That's an airport scanner where they can read what you had for breakfast at 164 feet away. And it's the same technology they're using on satellites that they're sending up to places such as Mars or out past asteroids to scan them to see what elements they are made of. Millimeter wave scanning can do all that. It's the same stuff that was being utilized in the new body scanner, the Chertoff. I ended up owning that company that sold them to the airports after 9/11. Millimeter wave. So between millimeter wave, 5G, and Wi-Fi, add to that, we still got 3 and 4G as well. And then we got all of the radio bandwidths. We got all of the microwave bandwidths. And a lot of the military technologies that they are messing around with. How do you think that that is affecting us biologically? So I'm going to tell you, you know, not only on a cellular level, is this potentially causing us harm, but we've been focusing on the brain. We've been discovering that the brain is much more complicated than we ever thought. They're finding ways to chemically and electrically manipulate the brain to do all kinds of things, but we have this ubiquitous signaling that is going on above our heads and around our bodies all the time. And I often wonder how that could possibly be affecting my ability to have coherent thought, let's say, my ability to be rational or to not be depressed. You know, they've already shown music, 100% music elicits emotion. Now, we could have told them that. They didn't need to spend $10 million on a study. I don't know if that's how much they spent, but, you know, all these stupid studies they spend all this money on. I'm like, things that are beyond obvious, like music provoking emotion. I lost my point. I'm watching this little wireless signal bounce back and forth in the picture. All right, let's get back to this. So Wi-Fi can tell if you're sad. Our modern environment is saturated with wireless signals, blah, blah, blah. Consequence of our insatiable desire to transmit data seamlessly and efficiently. And yes, our insatiable desire, where we are addicted to that dopamine button. We're going to talk about some dopamine today. Beep, beep, beep. Need to have our mobile device to be able to get our Snapchat. You know, that's how this has spread so insanely. I remember way back in the day, I don't know, probably 2002, 3, 4, when I was still doing engineering. Yeah, 2, 3, 4. Nobody had wireless. I was a wireless engineer. That was the one thing I got my big-ass certification on. Being able to do site surveys. You always had to make sure you got concentric circles to have proper coverage without dead spots. You set them to different channels. So you'd have all these overlapping signals. And you would literally blanket an area with these Wi-Fi waves. And I, you know, I've seen a bunch of studies too in schools. There's definitely concern as to what this could potentially be doing to children's brains. You know, don't worry about Nana's brain. Nana's brain's already probably half Swiss cheese, but Susie's brain is still in development. And Susie's brain probably doesn't need any additional disruptions, especially considering what we have discovered with children, video games, mobile devices, and that dopamine button, and how badly it can mess children up. Guys, our poor little munchkins are going to grow up in a generation where there are those whose parents got it, and there are those whose parents didn't. Now, my daughter has 3 friends in school. Just 3 out of all those kids. 3 friends in school that know what GMOs are. That know what vaccines are. That know about staying off the computer. That know about staying off the TV. That encourage reading. And playing Legos and doing tactile things. It encourages physical activity to get outside in nature versus sitting in front of the television or eating junk food. She has 3 friends. And those kids all bring their lunch to school every day. My daughter as well. Because none of us want them eating the government cheese and hamburger that they're going to feed to our kids. Some sort of bulk government food that they're sending to these schools. Because it's very sad. 3 children. And you know, one of the kids she went to preschool with, and his mom was really cool. I don't remember her name, but we used to talk every day because we'd see each other, you know, taking the kids in, picking the kids up. And she ran her own little internet, online internet business. And God, we're talking already 10 years ago. You know, and I was still doing this engineering stuff. So we had a lot in common. We talked and talked on the playground or whatever. But I talked to her about a lot of this stuff. And you know what? Her son is in my daughter's class again this year. They've been on and off for the last 5 or 6 years. And he's one of the 3 children that don't play video games and don't eat GMOs and whatever. And here's the thing. At 10 years old, they are already having a huge problem with disciplinary issues. We have 10-year-olds who don't do their homework at all. We have 10-year-olds who are ending up in the office and on detention. We have 10-year-olds stealing from the teacher. I mean, I just can't get over at 10 I mean, we're talking, this classroom sounds like half of it is loaded with juvenile delinquents, except they're 10. Now, what caused this? When I was 10, I was not a juvenile delinquent. That came a few years later. At 10, you should still be capable of being molded, not being rebellious, or distracted, or addicted, or a problem child with oppositional defiant disorder. Guys, I am seeing a lot of the stuff that we read. Remember we did those three stories? There was the little, I don't remember, it was a little girl, a little boy. I think it was the little boy in bed. And that was with Minecraft that was seeing all those flashing lights and waking up sitting, his mother would find him catatonic in the middle of the night sitting in bed. Then we had the girl who ended up in the mental institution two or three times. She was a teenage girl after her addiction being online. And then we had the adult, the journalist, who had talked about his own journey of trying to disconnect himself. And again, like I've said many times, there's a big difference between the before the internet people, those of us who were born before, those of us who were born after and never knew the world before. It almost seems that those of us who were born before the internet still have the ability to regulate. We still can flip it off, and even though we don't want to, as I'll admit, I've spent my entire adult career being attached to the machine, helping build the machine. But I can turn it off if I want to. But what they've discovered is that children's brains are way, way, way more susceptible to being horribly addicted with this dopamine chemical that is produced every time we touch one of these devices. We literally are turning our babies into freaking heroin junkies. Digital heroin. And these kids, if anybody's ever known a junkie or been a junkie themselves at one point in their lives in some low point somewhere, you'll know what I'm talking about. A junkie will do anything to get their next fix. They will get violent. They will get rude. They will steal. They will not be following direction. They will just be focusing on how to get their next fix. And here's another problem. You know, they're rolling out all of this education for children in these little apps. Except here's an issue. You have applications trying to teach our kids, because, you know, it's going to be so much better to sit them in front of a computer all day and hope that they learn by playing video games. But what is actually happening is that all these flashing lights and excitement that's going on the screen in order to teach Johnny is actually more akin to a slot machine, ding, 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 with all the flashing lights. And all that's doing is giving Johnny a bigger dopamine boost. So guess what? With dopamine, that addictive chemical, the chemical of addiction, every time you get a fix, next time you need a bigger fix. So what these applications have actually done is now we have our children sitting in a classroom listening to the teacher, God forbid, not with their nose in front of a computer screen, playing some quote-unquote educational video game. And they are beyond bored. They can't listen to Mr. Smith because Mr. Smith is so freaking boring. Sorry, Mr. Smith, I can't pay attention for more than 7 seconds because the goldfish won. Remember that study? And they tried to discount that study. That was a Microsoft study. It wasn't Joe's goldfish studies. So we got an attention span of 7 seconds. I think that's what it was. Maybe it was 7 minutes. I think it was 7 seconds. So beyond pathetic. So we've created all these mood disorders, discipline disorders, learning disorders for this next whole generation of children that are trying to be convinced that the next step for human evolution is to merge with the machine. And that's what all the experts are saying now. This is the next round of human evolution. I don't know about you, but I'm not going to evolve into some sort of transhumanist half man, half robot, nanobots in my blood to connect my neocortex 24/7 because I can't live without it to the cloud. No, thank you, Mr. Kurzweil. You know, and that's the truth. All right. Well, I rambled a while here. Let's take a look now. I want to see. Where is it? Wi-Fi sees through walls. Wait, we're going to find the dopamine. So we have covered so many different stories that have talked about dopamine. Just all keeps coming back to that dopamine button. Your friend and I were talking one night. Had a lot of things to talk about. And we're having all kinds of discussions about, you know, some issues they're going through or whatever. But we were talking about motivations for this, that, and the other thing. And it was just too funny because he always thought I was full of shit. Until we're really dissecting things. And every single time I was like, well, look, that again can be tied to dopamine as the motivation. That is that chemical that makes you anticipate. That chemical that is the dangling carrot to make you chase it off a cliff. And you won't be paying attention. Anytime you get that dopamine dose, you are high as a kite. And you know, we should find out what happened to those dopamine headphones they were going to release. Because that was exactly what it said. These brand new dopamine headphones, and they use electrical zippity zaps right on the vagus nerve that can be accessed right next to your ear. That story says these are the new dopamine headphones and they will help you get high as a kite. I mean, how good could that possibly be? They've found already with fMRIs about how the brain of a psychopath, and I'm not talking like traditional what you think of as a psychopath. I'm talking about psychopathy disorder that we have dug deep into. Some of the stuff that Dr. Simon really tipped me off to on how psychopathy is so prevalent in our society. And we really started to take a look at how that happens. And through our research here on the show, it almost looks like it's a dopamine button that didn't. In psychopaths, fMRI scans, they were able to determine that that area of the brain that produces dopamine tends to be much larger in psychopaths. It being much larger means that the psychopath needs to produce much more dopamine to be satisfied. Because it's the addiction chemical, they're going to need more and more and more every single day to get that thrill back. They have to keep up in the ante, find some new crazy thrill to get them off. Well, the scary part of what they found while doing fMRIs on psychopaths' brains is that they very, very much look like children and children's fMRI scans that have video game addictions. Ding! Video game, as you're manipulating that joystick, go for the carrot, Johnny, that little bitty piece of cheese. And when Johnny gets the cheese, Johnny makes it to the next level. Ding! He gets his dopamine dose and he goes on to level number two. Well, as Johnny continues on a daily basis, not only is he being trained to be a good little soldier of the future, good little drone pilot, but Johnny is being conditioned like a Pavlovian experiment to run after and seek the cheese. But each time he seeks the cheese, Johnny needs a little bit more cheese. They discovered in children with video game addiction, that area of the brain that produces dopamine gets bigger and bigger and requires more and more, and their brains start to look like a psychopath's. Now, guys, I don't know about you, but the fact that we are creating a generation of psychopathic children, and I'm telling you, if you start digging now, you're going to find out there's a lot more literature out there than a few years ago. There are Harvard scientists now, you know, who probably put in a jewel and said, you're a tinfoil hat wearing lunatic. But hey, I'm a mom. I saw it way back. Just the change in personality, not even 5 minutes in front of a screen. My child's personality completely flipped on its head. She became a child that I didn't even recognize. And now I'm seeing this story echoed all over. It's not just me. They have a new documentary, and I really need to find time to craft a nice introductory email and get it to the principal over at my school district. It's called Screenagers, and it's all about our devices, the chemical reactions, and what it is doing to our children's brains and how to control it. It was done by, I'm pretty sure, she was either Harvard or MIT, a doctor who had children of her own, and she started to see issues and really started to dig into it and discovered that, wow, we got a big problem, Clyde. So as they are trying to get us to step up for this 21st century medicine, these 21st century cures, wearables, implantables, right? Yesterday we find out you could have implantable brain devices that we can then connect direct to Wi-Fi and transfer information without us doing a thing. You know, that is the ultimate. We have wearables, implantables, and then augmentation. It's a lot of what Kurzweil's talked about. And then once we've augmented, then it should be pretty easy to upload and download ourselves to the cloud. And then we will be ethereal. No more physical body, just download Nana at Christmas time. To the avatar that you rented, $29.95 for the weekend. You know, it's very disturbing. And they've convinced these kids that there is no privacy. Tell everyone on Facebook what you had for dinner and when you blew your nose. Because everybody cares, Johnny. Everybody cares. You know, and not only are they turning these children into little humans with psychopathy disorder, this addiction disorder. But they are turning them into little Nazi narcissists with instant gratification syndrome. These kids don't know how to wait. These kids don't know how to be patient. These kids don't know how to work for anything. These kids live in a world where they are the center of attention, just like their first-person shooter game. The world revolves around them. Everybody wants to know what they're doing. Everybody cares and adores them, no matter how bratty they are. But guys, this is not going to create a better world. This is going to create an entire generation of children that then will be able to be diagnosed as quote unquote, oh, mentally ill. And as we're working now on all these huge programs, we got all these dollars now for 21st Century Cures Act and the NDAA 2017. And we got this neurological surveillance section of the 21st Century Cures Act. It's going to focus a mental disease, and being able to diagnose a mental disease through your voice patterns on your smartphone. Got good old Tommy Insel, former director, National Institute of Mental Health over at Google's Verily, working on this very thing. And then we find out that they can actually read things about us, suck out our thoughts and our emotions, and manipulate our feelings with different types of wireless, ubiquitous communication technology. It's really got to make you worry. And there's been so much research that has gone into dopamine, because dopamine is a key to so much. Let's get over here to... where is it? I can't read any of my little tabbies. Where the hell is that story? Hold on. I don't know what game that was. Oh, come on. I just had it open. Maybe I moved it so I would. Yeah, I did. I moved it. All right. So this is out of Scientific American. Oh, and you know what? Hey, I wanted to mention something to you guys. Talking about censorship, you know, they've been cracking down on Google AdWords, or AdSense, I mean, and not allowing people to earn any income whatsoever on a website that has information that maybe Google doesn't agree with. They're even doing the same on YouTube. It doesn't even have to do with the title. I guess they must be scanning for keywords as well, because I've played some experiments where I don't necessarily title a show. I will just leave the title of the show itself, but not put content in the title. And problem I've run into is that I think we're going to be screwed, guys. This is going to piss me off. problem we've run into is I think that they are scanning the audio, finding keywords, and blocking any type of monetization, which, of course, then discourages people from doing things along those content lines if they're not going to be able to even make 5 cents on it. But another thing that I'm finding that is quite restrictive of information is the fact that many, many of these publications now, and I mean literally, this is probably the fifth one in the last 2 days, seems to have now put up a paywall. So Scientific American, one of my favorite magazines of all time, and yes, I subscribed to it for many, many, many years, but it's been very helpful in a lot of these things that we've been digging up. But they all now are pay. They're giving me 2 sentences and I need to pay 6. How much was it? To access this article, I need to pay $6.99 a month. Or I can get the digital issue and a subscription for $20 a month. Now, what am I going to do if every single one my scientific journal starts putting up a paywall? Think about how that's going to restrict our ability to get knowledge. This free internet is no longer going to be free. And, you know, that was a plan a long time ago. Let's see if we could do this. This was my dopamine story. This is very upsetting because I can get just one paragraph. And then I better get out that credit card and pay $6.99. For 30 days, 30-day access. Who's going to be able to afford that shit? Let me see if I can. I have a little tricky. I've done this a couple times. There's a thing called cached. Nope. Even in the cached version of this, it is under a paywall. Well, let's see if maybe someone copied and pasted it to another page. Oh, nope. It looks like they just keep linking back to the original story. Wow, how sucky is that? This is going to make 2017 very difficult to do research. I'm going to tell you that right now, especially when I'm tired. Usually a lot of time I'm doing this stuff late at night. Digging, digging, reading, reading, digging, digging, reading, reading. And if I run into obstacles, I have a tendency to just skip it and go to something else so I don't get frustrated. But, wow, this sucks. So I guess we're not going to be able to read about dopamine. But, I mean, we've talked enough about it. We've studied enough about it. Dopamine is that addiction chemical. It is the chemical of desire. And that's what this whole article was talking about. And it was all kinds of different desire, the addictions to gambling. You know, Parkinson's patients, we've talked about this before as well. Parkinson's patients have a problem producing dopamine. Now, on the other hand, psychopaths have too much dopamine. But Parkinson's patients have problem producing dopamine. And so one of the treatments for Parkinson's patients is to give them dopamine, whether it be in some sort of medication or some sort of activity that produces dopamine. And a lot of times when someone is getting treated for Parkinson's disease, they end up with some horrible addiction, a lot of times to gambling. Gambling, sex, heroin, cocaine, cigarettes, alcohol, all cause the dopamine rush. It's all the same part of the brain. Well, here, let's take a look at this one. Here's an interesting story out of Vanderbilt University. Dopamine impacts your willingness to work. So for all those school kids who won't do their homework or listen to Mr. Smith, and all of those future workers who are going to be losing their jobs to the robots who are going to take them all, don't worry about it. We'll get universal basic income. Everyone will be happy. They'll pay us to do nothing. Well, they've been manipulating that dopamine button for a very long time. So let's find out what it does to our willingness to work. Slacker or a go-getter. Everyone knows that people vary substantially in how hard they are willing to work. But the origin of these individual differences in the brain remains a mystery. Now, this story is from 2012, so I will guarantee you it's not a mystery anymore. Now the veil has been pushed back by a new brain imaging study that has found an individual's willingness to work hard to earn money is strongly influenced by the chemistry in three specific areas of the brain. Guys, hey, look, they proved scientifically that all my yarns that I've spun about that dangling carrot, that Pied Piper, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, have all been right on the money. Blame it all on Edward Bernays. In addition to shedding new light on how the brain works, the research could have important implications for the treatment of attention deficit disorder, depression, schizophrenia, and other forms of mental illness characterized by decreased motivation. Guys, it's all about cracking the secrets of the brain, being able to control and manipulate how we feel, what we do. This is the ultimate control. And then be able to surveil it. Ding! 21st Century Cures Act, a whole section on surveilling neurological disorders. And to be able to diagnose on the fly with Dr. Smartphone mental illness on a spectrum. So every single one of us will be guaranteed to be somewhere, whether it be high or low or in the middle, on that spectrum. This study was published in 2012 in the Journal of Neuroscience, and it was performed by a team of Vanderbilt scientists, including postdoctoral student Michael Treadway and professor of psychology David Zald, using a brain mapping technique called PET scan. The researchers found that go-getters who are willing to work hard for rewards had higher releases of the neurotransmitter dopamine in areas of the brain known to play an important role in reward and motivation, like the striatum and the ventromedial prefrontal cortex. I was always a go-getter. Told you, for many years on my desktop, my wallpaper was the picture of a big snail in the middle and a hand holding a stick over the top of the snail. And dangling off the end of the stick was a string, and on the end of the string was tied a carrot. And that motivated me every single day, because that's exactly what it was. You know, on Fridays, when you get your paycheck, there's a total dopamine rush. And every week I would go, oh, I hate this freaking job. I hate this freaking job. But guess what? Every Friday I got a paycheck, and then I liked the job for a little while until Monday came back around. You know, I did that for a good, this last time around, 13 years. It was a good motivator for a long time until, of course, started to affect my health as well, because I hated it so much. That's not good. You can't do something for 13 years that you dislike. I didn't dislike the job, but it was just really tough. There was no support from a management perspective a lot of times, and you just got abused. It's a very emotional roller coaster, abusey type thing, and the company really didn't give two shits much about their employees. All they cared about was making profit. So it was pretty depressing. But anyway, on the other hand, slackers who are less willing to work hard for a reward had high dopamine levels in another brain area that plays a role in emotion and risk perception, and that is the anterior insula. Past studies in rats have shown that dopamine is crucial for reward motivation, but this study provides new information about how dopamine determines individual differences in behavior of human reward seekers. The role of dopamine in the anterior insula came as a complete surprise to researchers, and that would be for the go-getters. The finding was unexpected because it suggested the more dopamine in the insula is associated with a reduced desire to work. So that must not be the go-getter. That must be the other people. Even when it means earning less money. The fact that dopamine can have opposing effects in different parts of the brain complicates the picture regarding the use of psychotropic medications that affect dopamine for the treatment of ADHD, depression, and schizophrenia, because it calls into question the general assumption that these dopaminergic drugs have the same effect throughout the brain. Ding, ding, they don't. I don't know, we're not going to read about all the healthy volunteers. This research is part of a larger project designed to search for objective measures for depression and other psychological disorders where motivation is reduced. And that's exactly it. They've been looking for easy ways to diagnose mental disease so they can scan all of us and determine how to fix us, because we all need fixing. We are defective. Right now, our diagnoses for this disorder is often fuzzy, and of course we have to base them on the DSM, which is just a list of symptoms without any type of real quantifiable numbers. But that's where Tommy Insel comes in. Tommy Insel over at Google's Verily. He is working and trying to get some tools together that we can use as definitive diagnostic tools. Imagine how valuable it would be if we had an objective test that could tell whether a patient was suffering from a deficit or an abnormality in an underlying neural system. Ding, 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 ding. Defective humans, defective humans. Guys, they're going to find a way with 21st century cures to make all of us defective. Nobody ever said nature was perfect. I don't want to be perfect. There's a story if we ever get here, and I'm really going to try because, I mean, these tabs have been up for weeks on end. But there's a story here that talks all about the singularity. And I think one of the stories is from the New York Times from like 2002 or 2008. Larry Page and Kurzweil and all those clowns giving an interview about what it means and how we're going to merge and what the future holds. We need to look at that again because that whole wet dream is coming to fruition now. And we are being groomed without most of us even noticing that all of this great technology that we get so excited about every Christmas, all the new bells and whistles, all the new cool little gadgets that do all kinds of cool things like count how many steps I'm taking. Nana, look it, I'm healthy now. I took 1,000 steps today instead of sitting in front of the TV. All these new devices and gadgets are bringing us closer and closer to becoming Tron. We talked about that yesterday. You were going to get sucked right into the machine before you knew it. And this 21st Century Cures Act, being able to monitor, bag, and tag all of our bio readings, put them in a dashboard, all to keep you healthy and safe, help you live forever, it's going to be our downfall. It's going to be the creation of Human 2.0 and all these children that never knew the time before computers and the internet and 24/7 ubiquitous connectivity are going to be the ones that are most apt to step right up. They will not be the resistant consumers, the people like you and I are, who are looking at this technology with skepticism going, hold on, Clyde, back up the truck. I do not want legions of nanobots in my blood. Well, unless, of course, it's to cure cancer, which is how they're selling it right now. But don't worry about it, because soon it'll be legions of nanobots to do other things. And we only need a few legions of nanobot test cases to be able to write a case study on. Big glossy pictures that we can then roll out, do marketing push, and show everyone how amazing this technology is, how we cured Nana and Johnny. Get everyone else to step right up. And once you've stepped right up to get these programmed biological synthetic whatever the hell they are, little DNA computers inside your body, they'll be able to do things to us from the inside. And I'm not saying we don't even, I don't know. They've been doing this research for a long time, and a lot of this stuff is spun out of mad science divisions. Groups working with DARPA. All in the name, of course, of national security. PTSD was why they started researching dopamine in the service. And how to manipulate and control those chemicals for super soldiers who don't get scared. But now they are turning it on us. Psh. A large majority of Americans now have mental disease. There was a story that just came out about that as well. Anyway, let's look at this. The research is designed as a part of a larger project to search for objective measures for depression and other psychological disorders where motivation is reduced. We found out now we have neurological surveillance. We'll be able to tell 24/7 what kind of brain chemicals you have flowing and how we can help you. Imagine how valuable it would be if we had an objective test that could tell whether a patient was suffering from a deficit or abnormality in an underlying neural system. Maybe we could go bzz, bzz, and fix you. With objective measures, we could treat on the underlying symptoms of the condition. And further research is needed to examine whether similar individual differences in dopamine levels help explain the altered motivation seen in forms of mental illness. Additional research is, so if you're lazy, guess what? You're going to be diagnosed as mentally ill. That's what it sounds like to me. Additional research is underway to examine how medications specifically impact these motivational systems. And let's see if I can make it to... We know we can read each other's thoughts. We know we can... Here we go. Send information back and forth with skull caps now and play video games with our minds. Again, thank DARPA for that one. Oh, and guess what? This is another article from Scientific American. Oh, this one is not locked behind a paywall. Is mental health declining in the U.S.? Well, guess what? Despite more people taking medications, progress against mental illness seems to have stalled. Well, don't worry. Put on a seatbelt, people, because 21st Century Cures Act, the mental health portion of that bill, all kinds of bazillions of dollars gone into research of good old Tommy Insel at Google, as well as GlaxoSmithKline and Google, are working not only on diagnoses, but treatments. Diagnoses through your cell phone and treatment with zippity zaps to try to cure you. The 1990s and 2000s were glorious decades to be a psychiatrist. Every year they had something new. Yes, chalk it up to big pharma. But today the shine is dimmed and the mental health of the nation may have declined in the past 20 years. But I'm going to tell you, we just had the 20th anniversary of the internet. Ah, I wonder if there's a correlation. This trend is what Tommy Insel, they even mention him, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, calls one of the inconvenient truths of mental illness. So good old Tommy Insel is going to change that. All right, guys, well, make sure you stick around because it is Wednesday. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next and then Solvener live at 1 p.m. Eastern. I hate to say it, but this is going to be Solvener's last show, at least for a little while. He's going to take a break, so make sure you catch that live radio tonight. Josh at 6, the boys from New York at 8, and Anti-Media Radio at 11. All right, guys, I will catch up with you.